Ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode, we explore, expand, and evolve our understanding of the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity and exponential growth. And now welcome your hosts, Dr. Jeffrey Smith and Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. And good afternoon, good evening, good morning, good day to all of you amazing people out there that are participating in the Adventures in Truth Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Looking forward to another great dive today with my good friend, Dr. Jeffrey Smith. Good afternoon, Jeff. How are you?
Marvelous, Jim. I'm looking forward to our playtime together here and another adventure of where we're going to go. We will only find out when we get there.
Yes. We have both been busy bees looking at all the ways to really begin to move the needle on the work that we're doing and how to get it out into the world in a bigger way and getting some clarity about how to do that in ways that are timely and effective and create an impression and all that kind of good stuff. And to that end, as I was working on some of my own stuff here, one of the questions that we had talked about generating some questions as a way of creating structure to what we're doing in a different format. And one of the questions that was on my list is this idea of what is purpose. And I kind of ran around a little bit with it because I the question itself was a little challenging to bring into focus because I kept wanting to add words. I kept wanting to make it one's purpose or your purpose or my purpose or the purpose or, you know, try to making rather than just focusing on the idea of what is this freaking idea purpose? What is this thing? It consumes, especially in the metaphysical community, it consumes people's lives. This idea of I got to have purpose and what's my purpose and who's my purpose and what am I supposed to be doing? And so I thought, you know, this process that we're doing is about really taking it down to the basics and looking at it in a way that our listeners are looking at the question and saying, okay, so what is purpose? Let's start with the basics. What's the definition? So, you know, as you know, in the many podcasts that we've done together, that's one of the things I like to do is kind of start with what is the baseline of reality that we kind of all agree to about what some of these things mean. And that typically is by way of definition. So as I was working on this, and I'm shifting a second here to look at what I was writing. And I lost you. Are you still there?
I'm still here. Yes.
Okay. Do you still see me?
I still see you.
Okay.
We can still see you, Jim.
Good. No, normally there's a little picture and there's no little picture right now. So anyhow, so the question is what is purpose? And so as I was looking at, I find that defining purpose in and of itself is an interesting conundrum. I looked at the Oxford Dictionary, which defined it as the reason for which something is done or for which something exists. And another Google definition, the reason for which anything is done, created, exists. And I thought, this is so interesting. The very definition creates confusion. Because the conundrum lies in the tense of the description of the definition. It's all past tense. We're not creating, we're not building, we're not focusing, it's done, it's created, it exists, its purpose is defined as the reason for which something is done or for which something exists. That's a past tense statement. So it doesn't have to do with something coming before. So I thought, geez, this is already interesting. It's already a conundrum, because it's here we are, these amazing beings looking for purpose. And what the definition tells us is that we are the purpose. It already happened. We got born. We came onto the planet. That event is over. Purpose has been served. So the question becomes, if that is ultimately purpose and our purpose is being here, what's the next thing? The for what? If purpose is already achieved, if we're already here, we already exist, so we have achieved the purpose of becoming whatever. So we attribute purpose to something outside of ourselves. So I was beginning, of course, to get into the religious process, because how else could you not? Again, not because I have something against it. Well, maybe I do. if I'm being real, because the more you dive in, the more you find out that these structures don't serve us even a little bit. They serve to confuse and to conflame and to make crazy basic concepts that seem pretty straightforward. So we go from this idea of my purpose was in becoming, and somehow in religion it is about becoming enough for some other entity or being. So now my purpose is to be good enough to be God. My purpose is to be good enough to be liked by God or loved by God or supported by God or to be with God when I'm no longer on the planet, tying back to what we were talking about earlier before the thing about our need to demonize death. So even in that construct, it gets messed up, because now we've created even more confusion and conundrum, because then you die and you've left everybody behind, and now you're back on purpose. Is that what that means now? You're back on purpose because you're now no longer here, which seems antithetical to the reality of the definition of purpose, which is we're here, we exist. What now? So gets me giggling. It's a kind of a fun place to start. There's a couple more thoughts here I want to share about it. One of the biggest challenges that I think of the human experience is this seemingly never-ending drive to significance. And it seems that we've connected everything we do to having a purpose that is significant. And much of that significance has been exacerbated over thousands of years back to the religious training and the social training and the cultural training that trains us to rein in our true beingness, our true nature, and our true essence. And religious says our purpose is to please our creator. Our essence knows that's completely incorrect. So that's kind of where I began with this. And I'm excited to explore it even further, because the idea of purpose is such a big deal. And the idea of significance, I think they seem to be closely intertwined, that we don't think that our being here is significant enough. And as a result, we spend all of the limited time we have here trying to reacquire the significance we came in with, just by virtue of the fact that we came from nothing. We came from a thought that became an idea, that became a desire, that became two people connecting in a physical manner, that created two physical aspects that joined together, that created life.
Well, that created our bodysuit.
Yeah. Life on the planet. Created the beginning of our experience of life on this planet.
Right. Would you mind rewinding a moment and diving a little further into our adventure in truth about purpose today? When you were talking about our essence knows that isn't true, that being purpose to please our maker. There was a little twist you put in there that I'd like just to dive into a little farther.
Sure.
Essence and pleasing the maker don't line up in the way that you were talking about it.
Right, because in the way that I see it, that I've seen it unfold in the world through my own perspective, whether it's the social constructs, but particularly with regard to religion, there is this idea that everything we do is to please our maker. Whatever that is. I mean, if you want to break it down into nuts and bolt reality, your creator or your parents. nobody, you know, the creation of your physical vessel happened because a sperm and an egg came together and created this physical bang. And now there's a physical being that they named Jim. But so in the context of purpose, it seems to me that, that essence, that part of us that comes in clear and pure and kind of engaged in the experience of exploring this new universe, already kind of has that sense. I think there's been so many different studies and articles and books and stuff written about the nature of the children and how, you know, they're sponges. They're here to absorb the experience and to take in all of the variety and all of the stuff that's going on. And because of the way we're constructed as a society, you know, learning boundaries and learning kind of to define who we are. And instead of that growth becoming an experience of what happens as a part of that individual being's process, meaning giving them the permission to explore whatever they're exploring of who they are, we tend to impose limitations and restrictions based on our ideas and whether they're religious or social or moral or whatever, that says your essence, your beingness isn't healthy. Your beingness isn't the safe place. Your beingness isn't who you really are. It's who we want to make you to be. It's who we want you to understand yourself to be. Based on me reflecting my own inadequacies and insecurities and issues that I may not have feel completely justified with in my own experience of my own process of birth and evolution. And I'm speaking of the generational aspect of parenting and however that looks.
So to support your statement, two passages that I cannot quote and will not quote chapter and verse to support what you're saying is, in the Bible, it says, in sin you were created, period. There's another passage that says, our lives, our experience, our works are as filthy rags. And that by ourselves, we are not redeemable. Our being here, according to the Bible, there is no redemption. There is no redeemable value. There is no worth to just us being here and living out our lives without acknowledging that because we were born into sin and we're sinners, we need a redeemer that had to be killed, which is strange that you're going to, if God is love, that you're going to kill to represent yourself as love.
Yeah.
And by the simple acknowledgement of, I need a savior and Jesus, will you be my savior? Now all of a sudden I'm redeemed. And now I have a place in eternity where, well, not a place in eternity, but a place in pleasant eternity versus a place in punishment eternity. So none of it makes any sense.
It's not even a place, actually. It's an opportunity if you can maintain yourself well enough through your existence to still be deemed worthy at the end of your existence.
Right.
by I don't know who, but I guess that ends up being ourselves.
So is the purpose then, according to really any religion, is to realize that without following the rules of that religion, you have no purpose and you're just fodder headed for the big eternal garbage can.
Yeah, I think more and more, and I you know, maybe I'm getting a little crazy, but purpose seems to be a bit of a scam. Almost seems to be a way of, again, pulling focus, because the conundrum exists in the very definition of what it is. if purpose has been achieved, we're here, then we are living purpose. And what that means going forward is, how do we direct our focus? We're already purpose-filled beings. We're already here filled with purpose. Our purpose is existence. We're here, we're doing it every single day. So that experience then becomes mired in all of the other stuff. And so we get to a point, I think, you know, what we try to do with these podcasts, what we're trying to do with Adventures in Truth is to peel back those things that we have considered to be the truths of the experience of being human and of living on this planet and being spiritual beings. How do you then redefine purpose? You can be purposeful. You can walk your life in purpose. That purpose, what's the point of having it defined outside of self? What's the point of having it be redefined? But that also created another interesting question, which is there is that the singular, quote unquote, singular purpose is achieved. We exist. Beyond that, that focus changes virtually all the time. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
So what I focus on in my life now, what I feel aligns with that essence, with that purpose-filled essence, is what I do now. But it isn't the same thing I was doing a week ago. It isn't the same thing I was doing a month ago, a year ago, 10 years ago. My focus was different. My understanding was different. My clarity was different. So the more peeling away, the more quiet, the more the tools that we've talked about using over time, you know, whether it's meditation or yoga or whatever it is, hiking, you know, chanting, whatever particular thing gets you into that expanded state or that space of remembering, which is kind of what I think is kind of cool about it, is that it brings you back to that sense of purpose. And that, I don't know that in the grand design, if you peel back anybody's design on their purpose, it's got to be construed from the essence of what their purpose is. Do you follow that logic?
So let's make it a little bit more simple.
Good. That's great.
I want to work with you on making it more simple.
I'm good. That's actually how I was going with my article was, okay, now we got to break it down into digestible steps because that's a lot.
Okay. So to do that, can we back up two or three minutes when you were talking about existence? Mm-hmm. And it's the second or third time that the word has come into our discussion today. And I'd like to share a brief experience of existence just so our listeners and so you and I can have the gratitude, in my opinion, that's required to understand existence.
Okay.
And I promise I won't take long, and I hope it will be worth the journey. So last night I was spending some time with my girlfriend, and she has a lovely home that has a hot tub. So we decided to hot tub, which is a nice end of the day experience.
Always.
There were some stars out. We had just experienced a minor earthquake that got everybody's attention, that cut into all the TV shows and was on the radio and whatnot, but it wasn't significant enough in Southern California that it caused panic or an alarm, but it certainly was an awakening moment for everybody to realize we live on a planet that moves. We live on a planet that is uncertain. So anyway, as our hot tub came to an end, I asked if she wouldn't mind laying with me for a moment on this large, I guess it's like a bed, but it's kind of like a chase lounge, if you will, and it had a mattress on it. So we were enjoying cooling off now in the 68, 69, 70 degree temperature in the evening under the stars. So here we are on this rock hurling through the universe at a certain distance from the sun at a time that there's enough oxygen to support our bodies the way that they're created. And she and I, as we were just laying next to each other, were really experiencing a moment of bliss, of true bliss that could have only happened under those mathematically ridiculous equations. To have the possibility of that moment mathematically is ridiculous. It's like, you know, one to the 10 zillionth. I think Timothy used to tell us it was one to 800 billion or something like that, that we even exist at all. But yet to have these moments of bliss are even more amazing because, you know, it's, she had to buy the house. She had to do all this work to create that location. And, you know, we're living in Southern California as opposed to the Sahara Desert or something where that would not have been possible. So it was a lot of work for both of us to just be there. But yet the work we were doing to have that experience, the purpose was to experience bliss. The purpose was to experience union, tranquility, love, and bliss. The hard part is it's hard for us to stay there. We, and in that moment, neither of us wanted it to end. It was like, I think she even said, I could just lay here forever. I could just be here in this moment forever. Unfortunately, in our bodysuits that we wear, our soul desires that. The body eventually gets tired and wants to sleep or needs to eat or has to go pee, or the bills won't just pay themselves. So we have to get up and do this work thing again to, maybe next weekend we'll be able to experience that again. So I just wanted to, I went on a little bit of a goose chase there, but I wanted to really drive home this, can we have gratitude and just really, really try to comprehend the uniqueness of our existence, of just being here, and then having these peak moments of what we would call bliss or euphoria or rapture or whatever you want to call that. Existence. It is mathematically, statistically a miracle, truly a miracle that we get to walk on the seashore and create an impression on sand that is ground up seashells that have been washed ashore from however many thousands of years it took to create the sand in that moment of time, that we can look at a footprint, just being able to make a footprint in a physical body that has life and has been breathed in with an essence, back to essence again,
yeah,
is just a miracle. Every one of our footsteps are a miracle, and we just take them for granted. So existence, just by itself, is pretty darn cool.
So the idea then is not far-fetched that purpose is that we exist, because the miracle is in the existence. So the purpose, the amount of purpose, the amount of focus, the amount of intention that it took for this moment or that moment or this being or that being is significant.
Incredibly significant. Monumental. I can't pronounce it. Whatever. I can't say it. It's so unique.
So to the basic premises, again, the conundrum exists, which is therein lie the purpose, therein lie the significance. It's clear and evident. And extraordinary, and yet it's not enough.
For what?
For most of us.
To what? Fulfillment? So purpose is now connected to fulfillment?
I mean, because ultimately I think we choose, or the idea of focusing on purpose is because it gives us a destination. That was the other part of the definition that I thought was interesting, is that there's a destination, there's an end result in mind. And if the end result is life, if the end result is to live, if the end result is creation, that's a pretty amazing end result, because it's not really an end, it's a new beginning, which is what most esoteric teachings continually teach, that there is every apparent end is just the beginning of the next new cycle or the next new ring of experience as you move up the spiral. To kind of dive in, you know, I kind of want to dive into this idea of why is it so debilitating to feel, and that's actually a rhetorical question, because the idea of feeling debilitated because you don't feel like you have purpose actually only makes sense because it undermines your very existence. So if you're undermining your own very existence by your own thought process, that could create some challenges. That could create some frustration. That could create some negative ramifications. But interestingly enough, and again, toward this idea, I'm going to bring in this other topic just because we've talked about it so much. I was reading this article about how the death of parents is so profoundly impactful. And as I read the article, I was overwhelmed by the ridiculous amount of negative perspective in the article. It was nothing about transition. It was nothing about, you know, it was nothing about anything other than demonization of death and loss and separation and all of the things the subconscious has battled for so long and battles most of our lives to try to get beyond, which is this idea of purpose, which we apparently already have. Yet we start at the beginning of this life experience being trained into the end experience as a negative result. So the idea of having a purpose with a negative end result has got to be a complete oxymoron. It's just, as I'm even speaking the words, it's kind of making my head spin, because you come in with this clarity of I'm existing, I'm here, here I am. Boom, you know, significance, purpose, it's all right here, it's with me, and the potential of all that exists within me. And from the minute go, you got to be told to watch out, because you don't want to get to that destination, because that destination isn't good, because that destination means somehow you failed life. And yet nobody's getting out alive. And so this idea of demonizing that process creates another level of struggle, because how can you refocus on a purpose that ends in you dying and leaving people behind, or people dying and leaving you behind, which is just like the quintessential elementary school childhood trauma, you know, of the parent that left the kid in the supermarket accidentally, you know, just getting distracted and suddenly the kid's abandoned in the supermarket. So now flash forward and now we're going to relive that experience on a quantum level, because not only have they left you in the supermarket, they've left you on the planet. They're not even here for you at all anymore. And all of that language is about me. It's about what you're giving me, what you do for me. I'm no longer significant. I don't matter because you're not here.
If you believe all that, absolutely, that would be your experience.
Right. Yes. Yeah. But I do think that is a predominant focus, and it's a gradient. Some don't go that far. Some go much further. But taking it back to bringing it back home again, with regard to purpose and significance, it makes it challenging to reconnect to those ideas within the self when there is no end result that seems worthy, or there is no end result that seems positive. Like, where do you go with it? So you focus on the minutia of this physical world and you lose all the aspects of the greater experience.
What is the it we're talking about right now?
Purpose, significance, I think. Where did it get confused?
The minutia, when you were talking about the minutia.
The minutia is the hyper-focus into the physical reality, and that the be-all, end-all is whatever you can force to happen by way of purpose.
Right. So I want to jump in for a moment and hopefully add some clarity. And if not, at least some controversy. Well, are you going to get controversy or clarity here? And out of that, some great conjecture, I'm sure.
Right.
So what we've been talking about is both concept, thought, definition, and our conversation keeps going back to body, keeps going back to the physical, which is our reality, that we live in a metaphysical and a physical reality. We live in a spiritual, thought-based consciousness, and we also have to do that within the confines of what seems to be this physical body, or you could even reduce that down in the most simple word of energy. Mm-hmm. So we have an energetic perception, physical perception, as well as a consciousness that we might call spirit or soul. And the answer has to be inclusive of both of those domains, consciousness and energy, that they're not the same thing. A lot of people believe that consciousness and energy are the same thing. They're actually not the same thing. Some books define consciousness as masculine energy, and the goal of the masculine energy, the ultimate goal of the masculine energy, is freedom. It wants freedom. And the ultimate goal of feminine energy is fullness. So think about that for a moment. If fullness and body and energy and physical are all ways of saying the same thing, purpose in that definition, to define purpose in the conception or the thought process of energy and physical would be fullness. And if you think about femininity or feminine energy, they want fullness. I want to be full of a great meal, amazing orchestra, a beautiful dress, all of the physical things, the flow, and just having a full, rich experience in life. And if you think about a cowboy, they don't care what color their chaps are. They don't care if they've taken a bath in the last week or not. It's about freedom. Anyway, I don't want to get off too much on that. That's another podcast at some point for us to get really into the depths of masculinity and femininity, or masculine energy and feminine energy. But if we could at least just go back to, again, either agreement, disagreement, or conjecture, or just a great discussion here on back to purpose. What is our purpose? Or for our podcast, if I were to write a title for this podcast in the spirit of Adventures in Truth, what is the truth about purpose? So to be able to define that, we would have to both define it in a spiritual, metaphysical consciousness perspective, mm-hmm. as well as an energetic, physical body perspective. It has to be done in both for it to be a full definition. Because one or the other isn't going to meet it, because it leaves the other out. It leaves it empty.
But isn't that sort of the whole thrust of the spiritual experience, or the idea of being able to shift state, to go into that expanded place or that connected place with whatever we consider it to be, our higher self or God or whatever, the universe?
Absolutely. But we're still left with the limitations of this body.
No, I'm understanding that. But where I'm going with that is that the idea is that when you build that strength in that muscle, in that clarity, in that space, in that energy, that's where inspired action starts, because that's where you get the impulses that drive you in the physical world to connect to those things and thoughts and ideas and people and stuff and places that help you to fulfill that desire for purpose and fulfillment, or for satisfaction, or for significance, or for whatever the case may be. So if you're living in that space, if you've learned and have crafted your experience in a way that your focus is on maintaining that frequency, that vibration, that energy, that through that, then you mold and construct and create the actual physical reality that you show up in. So it's, they're not, I guess what I'm trying to say, I mean, maybe saying the same thing, but I was hearing a kind of a disconnect in that they were separate, and they can be separate, and for most probably are separate. We have, you know, for many it's their religious principles or their spiritual principles against what they have to do in order to pay rent and pay the bills.
Right. Perfect.
The point of this conversation is that they are gross to me. That's what happens when you lose purpose and significance from the beginning. You start to build two separate dualistic identities, and that what we end up doing is spending most of our lives trying to undo the dualism for many. You know, some have that, some reach that calling, some don't. Some come to a place where they recognize the duality and go, I don't like how this feels because I feel like I'm living two different lives. And what I need to do is, how do I bring that back to what was the source? What was the origin? What was the purpose to exist, to be here? And I am significant. So if I'm going to be in that space, then that can direct how I create my life. But if your focus is that you can only create your life, no. If the focus is that you have to manage your life in order to get to that stuff, you're going backwards. You're putting the cart before the horse.
And what is that stuff?
If you're trying to put the worldly stuff, managing worldly stuff is your priority, and you have this other thing of your spiritual or religious experience or whatever, you put the cart before the horse, because you'll never get there from here if you put the worldly thing before the spiritual thing.
Right.
You're not going to get there from here.
Right. So we have an awakening at some point going,
potentially.
Ah, how many of my items do I need to gold plate, and I'll finally be fulfilled if my toilet and my sink are gold plated? People do that, right? That's a thing.
Yeah.
There's a sheik that has a car that's made out of 100% sterling silver.
Yeah,
there's whole car, and I'm sure he's so fulfilled. And I know that sounds like I'm. Please don't anybody hear this as racial or prejudice. I'm just an example of what Jim is saying. If I had 100 wives, a big huge castle or palace or whatever you call it, and cars literally made out of silver, and toilets and sinks ordained in gold, I must be completely fulfilled. What else could there be? But if I never met anybody living that lifestyle, but I'm pretty sure they're still thinking I need more, that what they have is not enough.
Well, and that appears to be, I mean, I think, again, we're talking 7.5 billion people. There's gradients of all of it. There are probably some who, like you said, the gold toilet was the piece de resistance. But here's the challenge, and that is, in the idea of there is no end to the journey. If gold toilet is your end game, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what next is either what next is more gold stuff, or maybe you move on to platinum, or maybe you move, you know, you move on to something else, because it's got to in some way stimulate your focus to take you to that next place. So if you're living in that place, and this is maybe where, you know, to your point, the existential crisis happens. You spend all of this time building a world that has gold toilets, and you finally get the world built that has gold toilets, and you go, I don't even like gold toilets. Why do I have gold toilets? You know, because that was the supposed purpose of it all, was gold toilets. The cool thing is that we're such amazingly dynamic and complex beings that even going to the point of creating gold toilets as the end game took such a tremendous amount of focus and intention and clarity of manufactured purpose on one level, but still clarity of original purpose on another, because you had the full freedom to express that in its entirety from beginning to end. And isn't that in and of, like you were talking about the, you know, your experience with the hot tub and a zine, it's the same projection. Thinking about the exponential the amount of whatever that word is, possibility, whatever, that it would take to have that end result be the end result, and that you manage to create that end result. That getting from, I mean, maybe getting to gold toilets wasn't that difficult, but it seems to me that if you're going to have a gold toilet, you got to have a lot of money. If you're going to have a lot of money, you got to come from something. And, you know, I mean, there's steps, there's process. The good news is that we don't lose anything in that process. Do you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, I chose to go the gold toilet route, so I failed.
Right.
That's not even close to true. You've gone the gold toilet route because that's what garnered your focus and attention. And it's what you knew. You did what you had from where you were with what you have.
Right.
And you took all that energy and purpose and intention and figured, gosh, I'm going to be, look how significant I'm going to be. I'm going to have gold toilets and people are going to go, look at my gold toilets. And isn't this amazing? And all that good stuff. And you get there and people go, wow, that's pretty amazing. You have gold toilets, and People Magazine does stories on you, and Time Magazine does stories on you. And so there's all this sort of false fulfillment process going on.
Yes.
And yet there is also fulfillment process going on, which is not false fulfillment, because you're still carrying you with you. Are you following where I'm going with this? This is not, you didn't leave a section off. You're walking in duality. So there is a level of satisfaction occurring, but the existential crisis is when you realize that the two are separate and not together.
Yeah. So we really are saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of I'm reading the going through the autobiography of a yogi again. One of Yogananda's gurus claimed to get to a place in his life where sleep was no longer required at all, and spent 45 years in meditation, 20 hours a day, and still did not believe that he had found God or understood God. And he's like, it is not even conceivable that in 45 man years of 20 hours a day that you could still truly know and understand the universe, God, the cosmos, and all of that. And he thought that he had barely made a dent or a scratch in trying to conceive and understand the entirety of it. And I don't know, that was astounding to me. Number one, that 20 hours a day in a cross-legged meditative state, of course, in an ashram or a hermitage or a cave, it was done in all three of those different locations.
Yep.
But there is no tending to the physical, and there's no relationship. There's no interaction with other people in that state, which one would have to ask, why are you on a planet with X billion people if you've completely removed yourself from all the people and all of the cares and concerns of going to birthday parties and watching grandchildren be born and going to funerals and all of just those essential social things? Completely remove yourself from that. Is that purposeless? Because you're in this grand pursuit of understanding consciousness and trying to live outside of the body, trying to live, again, masculine energy, freedom from the limitations of the physical, which would be consciousness. So just fascinating reading and conjecture with regard to this struggle that we have of wanting to be consciousness, wanting to have spiritual pursuits and pursuing love and patience and kindness and all those higher virtues. But yet we're still trying to do it within the confines of on a planet that has gravity, that requires energetic sustenance. Oh, that was another thing he said. Didn't need to eat either. Just being able to pull energy into the body through a stream of consciousness. So, yeah, okay, but who of us is going to spend 45 years to get to a state where I don't need to sleep, I don't need to eat? Kind of cool, which would mean you don't have to poop either. So that then rules out the need for gold-plated toilets. We just solved that, Jim. There's no need for gold-plated toilets on the planet because you don't need to eat. The truth about gold-plated toilets. There you go.
I just have to sit with that full circle moment. That was profound. You know, it's funny. It's one of the things I used to talk about when I first read Autobiography of Yogi years ago. I used to say in my presentations, I used to laugh because I knew then I was screwed because I wasn't sitting under some freaking tree meditating for 20. That wasn't happening. So I'm like, okay, shit's over for me. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do from here because that ain't happening. You know, flash forward 35 years later, it's a vastly different ballgame. But yeah, and I had to laugh too as you're telling the story because the kind of, you know, we take some of the Eastern stuff a little more seriously. But when you think about it, I was actually thinking about this on the way back from breakfast today. I was thinking very similarly, this idea that this guy sat under, you know, meditated for 20 hours a day for however many years. I'm like, why the fuck didn't you sleep? That's only 8 hours. You know? So what's the point? So I wonder if there isn't a bit of, is hyperbole the right word? Isn't a bit of sort of the Bible, you know, in it. This is another version of another version of another version of, in the sense that, yes, I'm sure that there are teachers and people who did what they did, but that culture and those people probably still are still human and probably still expand and extend and get creative a little here and there. And, you know, to bring some gravitas to the story and to bring some significance to the importance of the story. And I don't mean that, I'm not trying to be negative or to bash any of it. It's just keeping it in perspective. Mm-hmm. I don't know that the Eastern culture has some more virtuous approach. They just have better language. So it sounds good. And there's a lot more, I think, that speaks to things that resonate in our being more deeply and more profoundly. But yeah, Again, that may not be true because there are just as many people who have no interest in Eastern culture that have no interest in Western culture. So again, it's 7.5 billion people. There's lots of variety, lots of possibilities there. But I like the idea because it speaks again to the idea of purpose, that this person kind of felt like their purpose was to spend their time doing that. And so they stayed in that state of beingness only to find that lack of engagement was just as unfulfilling as engagement can be sometimes.
Right.
You know, and that sort of spiritual, strictly spiritual thing, obviously if we were meant to be strictly spiritually driven, we may not need to have bodies. We may not need to go through this process, but we are. So again, to the definition of purpose, it's all past tense. It already happened. So, you know, that taking it a step further, does that mean then that purpose was the Big Bang? Was purpose, purpose was that initiated purpose? You know, the energy, the sourcing of the energy is now where it gets confusing, because if it's a done deal, it came from something. What is the something? Is the something me? If the something is me and I'm a spark of God and I am an aspect of God exhibiting in physical form, then I created my purpose in being here. And that's really what many teachings talk about, that evolution of coming to the planet with specific purposes and reasons. Whether they're quote unquote lessons or teachings, I think that became part of the process because we got so waylaid from the original purpose. So it became about lessons and teachings in order to rein in the human experience so that we could find ways to manage the human experience in the spiritual experience. So it becomes a less of a, yes, there's lessons and things to learn. It becomes that instead of continuing to refocus back into the original idea of purpose. I exist, therefore I am significant, therefore I am. Therefore, what's next? I don't know. What's next is whatever my energy wants to do next, whatever my field is seeking in the way of stimulation or satisfaction or understanding or clarity or whatever the case may be.
I like how we have connected purpose and fulfillment together in our discussion, or whether we have or not, at least we've been talking about that. I also find it fascinating, and it's come to me several times in our podcast today, the it being an inspiration or a thought or a reminder that, as far as I know, I think Amazon is probably the most successful retailer ever, and they're branding themselves as wishes fulfilled. On their box, you get a box in the mail, somewhere on that box it either says wish fulfillment or wishes fulfilled. All you got to do is push a button to make that happen, which is actually quite an amazing thing. I want something, I push a button and it shows up at my door. That is an amazing, I mean, that's like material, that's like manifesting. It's a just shy of, well, I also have to pay for it. You know, I have to do some work to get it, but you don't really have to go work right there in that moment. Mm-mm. And then go somewhere and get it. It just, you want it, you find it, you push a button and it shows up. And that's called wish fulfillment. And they're satisfying wish fulfillment. They're the brokers of wish fulfillment. But again, it's in the physical world. And I think we could agree, you will never experience purposefulness and fulfillment in the physical world. Completely not possible to do in just the physical world by itself. So we have to have some external or existential outside of ourself inclusion to experience purpose, to experience purposefulness. It's a both thing. We're back to, it has to be part metaphysical, part physical, to know that I have purpose. I am purpose. I like that idea. I am purpose. I am purpose. I am purpose.
And really all that's saying is I am focus. I am a focus of energy. Now, where am I focusing? What am I directing that focus toward? You know, if you want to get into the, well, no, again, because we get to that point and that feels really good and expansive and amazing. And then we get mired down in needing to define it further.
Well, let's talk about energy and consciousness again. A gallon of gasoline is energy. And by itself, it's doing nothing without conscious intention. It's just unused energy in that moment. It has potential. And there's, you know, all these different types of energy, kinetic energy, potential energy, all different ways of describing energy. So energy still needs an intelligence. By itself, energy does not have an intelligence. It does not have an inspiration. And that's where consciousness blends with energy to then give purpose. So I think we're making, or maybe we've made the assumption, or in the past just assumed that energy was the end all be all, but without direction and guidance by itself, it's just the wind blowing somewhere, hasn't been harnessed.
So based on what you're saying then, that if we consider that we are purpose, then our purpose is to flow energy. Our purpose is to direct and focus energy.
Yes.
In whatever capacity or form we deem to do that.
Yeah, we call that choice. And we call, and then we're back to free choice. What is a religious expression of you can do whatever you want as long as you follow the rules. We were created to have, what is it, was that what we call it? Why am I blanking on this right now? Freedom of free choice.
No, that's free will.
Free will, thank you. Free will.
I wasn't sure where you were going initially. Okay, yeah.
Which is another kind of an interesting, you know, true free will would be you can do whatever you want without consequence. And let's just talk about it when you're done with regard to what did you experience. That would be free will. But if I give you free will, but I don't like how you've used it and what you've done with it, and you're going to get punished for it in the end, that's not free will. Totally not free will.
Well, and I think we talked about that before in another podcast that, that in defining free will, where it's energy that's available to you. Free will does not mean you have the freedom of every opportunity, possibility that exists within the confines of the universe. Within the field that you have created, there is a range. There is a range. Yeah, there's a, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the word I'm looking for. There is a range of possibility available that is considered free will, that because my field is in a particular place, my range may be here. And for someone who may be more limited, their range is going to be here. Their free will exists between here and here. It isn't all of this. They have no access. There's no connection to all of this. There's only connection to what is here. And I'm not sure what the point of that was, except that.
Well, you were talking about energy, or we were talking about energy needing intention and intelligence or inspiration or guidance. It's a combination. It isn't just energy by itself is what we're experiencing. Our bodies require energy. Our bodies are energy. But even that is something that our bodies by itself don't just manufacture it.
Right. And that's part of why it's, you know, things like daily practices are encouraged, and things that bring us to a conscious awareness of that energetic state that we exist as. So that you create the space. I mean, that's what I find in when I do my daily practice, is that it creates space. It creates space between the restrictions of the physical world and the unlimitedness of the spiritual world. And it connects them in a way that allows infinite possibility to come into this limited possibility and express itself. Mm-hmm. And my job is, how do I translate that energy? How do I use my purpose, my focus, to translate that energy, to move that energy in a way that brings the highest level of love or satisfaction or connection or, you know, but even as we talk further, it becomes a little more confusing again, because we're attributing, we're giving attributes as opposed to states. And I think that's different, because attributes typically are, to me, it seems, would be things that we contrive to think that will make us feel better.
Yeah. And then we realize, after we've had the experience, sometimes we haven't changed states. We still feel the same that we did. We just now have a bigger ship. One of the things that I love right now is that there are some people on this planet that have decided that this planet isn't enough. We're going to go to Mars. Our president even said it on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
We're going to be back on the moon, and we're headed to Mars. And before him, Elon Musk has been talking about it for the last couple of years, for sure. So even if you owned this entire planet, if you had domain over the entire planet, there's already somebody thinking, that's not enough, we got to go somewhere else, do Manifest Destiny on Mars.
As soon as you were talking about that, I was right back at Star Trek. And the opening of Star Trek had nothing to do with conquest, had nothing to do with populating, had nothing to do with a new place to live, had nothing to do with any of that, except to explore new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before. How about that for purpose?
Yeah.
Right? And I was thinking of, because as you were talking about Trump and talking about Musk, two completely different focuses. I don't know that, at least of the things that I've seen, to me, Elon Musk's focus is not about conquest and ruling the universe. It's there. it's there. Sort of like, we're here. It's there. Let's, you right. know.
We can do this.
We can do this.
Wouldn't it be fun to do this?
Yeah, where the other is not that at all. It's still that weird patriarchal conquer everything. I don't know, just.
Yeah. Yeah. So in light of that, where we are now kind of pointed toward Mars, I would like to think about rovers, the Mars rover, mm-hmm. the purpose, the truth about the purpose of the Mars rover was to be able to go there because it doesn't require, it doesn't have the limitations of a physical body that needs to eat and sleep and can withstand this and that, G-forces and lack of oxygen and blah, 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 blah. So let's send a machine there to do what? What is the purpose of the rover?
A purpose to explore, to bring awareness of this place we don't have awareness of.
Okay, so it has a whole bunch of sensors on it that gather information yeah. that we can, as a blind man, try to understand the elephant in the room, as a weird way of describing it. And we're going to put this puzzle together, this information puzzle together, to then help us understand what the human being would need or could need or whatever this limitations or capabilities are. This rover is going to help us put that puzzle together because our purpose apparently is to put a human being on Mars for whatever reason. Conquest, destiny, we've already talked a little bit about that, the mining of resources, the, oh my gosh, we're headed toward annihilating everybody on this planet, so we need an exit strategy to take our same mentality to some other planet and duplicate it there again 10,000 years later or whatever. But the idea of a rover, I believe, is similar to what we're doing here on this planet, is we're exploring, we're adventuring, mm-hmm. and we're gathering data. To me, the purpose of that data is to create a collective consciousness of what the experience is to be a human being, mm-hmm. as well as in the conscious realm, if what works for me is that we are a part of God. Every one of us is a little piece of God. And for God to truly know itself, it has to be a rover in all of these different races, genders, economies, locations on the planet, time on the planet, the 1800s, the 1900s, 2000, whatever, so that God could truly know itself. It creates us as these little rovers that we go rove around, gather information through our experiences. Mm-hmm. When we die, we upload to the cosmic database of what it is to be God, that God gets to go everywhere in the universe to collect information in a living way. And hopefully we have some bliss along the way. We have hardship because it's good for God to know what it's like to have hardship. Can I climb that tall mountain? Can I endure life now without my eyes because I'm now blind? What is that like? As well as the moments like I had on the, you know, after the hot tub of just laying for 20 minutes in bliss, of just wanting nothing but just to experience that connection and that union and to marvel at the temperature and just how good the body felt spiritually and physically. There was a union there of spiritual and physical unity that I call bliss. And we want more with that. We call it recreation. We're recreating experiences to bring us bliss. Anyway, I kind of went on a little bit of a diatribe there, and we went to Mars in the process.
Mm-hmm. Been to Mars and back.
So what do you think about this idea that for God to know itself created all these little mini rovers to go collect data on what it's like to be human, what it's like to be here on the planet?
I think I'm good with, it's something that I kind of have as a basic tenet of my experience, you know, for me is that it's a very similar thing. But it did spark kind of an interesting thought process because, we're again, the assumption is there's something greater or something bigger or something. I mean, we're assuming we're a part of something, whatever that is. And how interesting it is that we don't seem to be able to find that or know that or, you know, it's sort of like the frustration that you experience every time somebody takes a picture of a freaking Sasquatch. It's like, really? With today's technology and UFOs, with today's technology, you can't get a clear picture of an unidentified flying object. They're all fuzzy and hazy, and you can't really tell what it is. It's sort of the same kind of weirdness of like, how is it that as a species, we've been on this planet for as long as we've been on this planet, and we've evolved extraordinarily, which in and of itself is evidence of eminent purpose. To me, that, you know, the human species has continued over and over and over, and even when civilizations have gone, new civilizations arise, and it just, there is this unbelievable momentum of purpose to evolve, to grow, to and to me it seems to keep coming back to this idea of evolution, and because everything seems to do that, everything has an evolutionary process. It's different for every aspect of our experience, yet the rock I don't think is any less purposeful than I am, because that rock is having its experience, whatever that may be, at whatever level that is, and I'm not even gonna claim to know.
Well, it also supports you standing on it.
Exactly. And it's
you dense. couldn't exist without the rock.
There you go. Fall through the planet. So it's a little frustrating to me that it seems like a giant secret when it doesn't seem to need to be. So if the idea is that it's not meant to be, then it should be ultimately easier to comprehend than what we're making it.
Sounds like another podcast. What is God?
Yes.
What is God?
No, yeah, we're not going there today.
You know, when you were talking about it,
we'll be here at 12 o'clock tonight going, okay, and now we're
right. Yeah, it made me think of an ant colony where they, you know, the colony is under the ground somewhere and some kind of spiral formation down underneath there where most of them re-congregate each night, but during the daytime there's scouts way away from the colony, and they drop a little scent so that the others can find the trail. And if they find something, somehow they don't have to run all the way back to the colony to let the colony know, hey, there's some good stuff over here. Somehow they're able to transmit that information without a radio. They do it so that others follow that trail.
Yeah.
And then you have all the ants that are on the trail bringing back the good stuff to the colony. And then you have still other scouts going out even further. So to me, that's like the Mars rover, or it's like Elon wants to go to Mars. And the rest of us are kind of down. But yet there's still something, that thing that you're talking about. I use the word collective consciousness to describe that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what if that really is it? You know, the autobiography of the yogi says there is no dude sitting on a throne somewhere in some corner of the universe
right. That's
called God. That part seems to be a more common notion now within spiritual people, not necessarily religious people, but more spiritual people, spiritually minded or oriented practicing people, that there is not a single entity. Anyway, I'm sorry, we're getting ahead into our next podcast, perhaps.
Yeah, no, it's good because it actually, you know, when I had my ayahuasca experience, I don't remember if I told you this, but one of the things that was so profound to me in that experience was, at least in the context of what I was experiencing, I was going through this process of life and death, and I was doing it repeatedly, and I would die in the physical, and I would join the collective, and then there would be all of this energy coming together and my merging of my energy into that collective energy. And then there would come this moment where this breath would occur, and that breath was what took me back to life again. And it would bring me back to the clarity of the physical experience. And this went on for, seemed like forever. But I remember so specifically one of the things that that experience was, and I said this to Shaman, I was like, this is really bizarre, but I found that I like it here better. And I'm not sure I understand that. And it seemed to be because of all of the color and flavor and things that this world enables us to experience that just is not part of every experience. And that it isn't that there's a wrong thing one way or the other. It just was, there's just that moment of experience of, wow, this is, there's something preferred to exploring this. And then if I look at some of the other teachings and people that books and things that have talked about, you know, this experience on the planet being the leading edge, this is the forefront of evolution. This is the forefront of all of it. And everything is focused here, you know, to this process of movement and evolution. So anyway, yeah, we could get very devolved into so many different topics here, but this idea of this grand, the idea of grand, you know, the sort of overarching purpose, this focus, this, you can see, I mean, the cool thing about history is that you can see the extraordinary amount of evolution that's taken place and the extraordinary amount of purpose that had to have been instilled for that purpose to continue to evolve, for that to continue to go in the direction it's gone in. It didn't just die off. It didn't peter out. It hasn't ended. Maybe it will in ours or some other lifetime. Who knows?
I'm sorry. I just got caught up in that expression, peter out. And is that in reference to Peter sinking down in the water as opposed to being able to walk on it like Jesus did?
Yeah.
Is that where that comes from?
I don't know.
Was he the one that got out of the boat and tried to duplicate the miracle of walking on water?
I think so. I don't specifically remember.
Oh boy, poor Peter. He petered out.
He petered. Oh yeah.
Sorry.
He lost his faith. He petered out. He lost his clarity.
No mojo for Peter.
Yeah, no, interesting that. Oh my goodness, that.
But the universe hasn't done that. To your point, I'm sorry, I digressed.
No, not at all. It's just that, you know, as you go from macro, micro to macro, you know, you look at the larger scheme of what an amazing process. I was watching a show, one of those Blue Planet nature show things, and I was absolutely blown away. You know, part of this clarity stuff I was talking about. So there's this type of bird that migrates to this isolated island somewhere that I can't remember right now. And the whole purpose of this, and the dolphins meet them at this place, and so do the mackerel. And so there are these unbelievable swarms of mackerel wherever this happens every year that this migration takes place. And so watching it on TV is just mind-blowing. These birds just dive bombing into the ocean. Like, I'm talking hundreds of thousands of birds just p-tier-oom, 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 going in after. And they're describing this process. And they're talking about how the dolphins are in the water. And the dolphins create this effect where they go around and they spin around the mackerel and drive the mackerel to the surface so the fish can eat. And as the fish dive down, then the dolphins then can swim through and they get to feed. And this goes on for however long it goes on. And literally thousands of dolphins, hundreds of thousands of birds, millions and millions of these fish. And this goes on for some period of time and then it's over and everybody goes about their business. And the thing that was absolutely mind-blowing to me about it was there was no place in that process that, and I know this is going to sound bizarre, that there was negative energy. Meaning you didn't get the sense that the fish were afraid. You didn't get the sense that the fish were going, oh my God, we're getting eaten. You didn't get there. It was a symbiotic, co-creative dance that was the most extraordinary thing I think I've ever seen, because all of the parts were just doing their purpose, whatever that is. They were fulfilling some magical, incredible purpose of existence that just brings them together. This thing happens. It's extraordinary. All kinds of nourishment happens as a result of it. And you move on and go about your business.
Right.
You know, and that's sort of, to me, it's again that idea that we demonize so many different things in our experience and don't allow for the natural organic magic of things that inherent purpose brings with it.
Right. I love that you brought us here to this part of the conversation, and using your story that you're sharing with us, I would like to say that if we're on board with this idea that we've been here before, we've had many lives, not every life is a dolphin, not every life is a bird, not every life is a fish, but they're all, some might say the dolphin are more important than the fish, but in that arrangement that you just mentioned, they're all three necessary to make it all work.
Critical.
They're all three, I would like to say, divinely created, inspired, made, doing what they're supposed to be doing. And so in our lives, there are dolphin walking around, there are birds walking around, there are fish walking around. Sometimes you're the dolphin, sometimes you're the fish. Not everybody can be a dolphin. Imagine if every living creature in the sea were a dolphin.
Right.
Nothing for them to eat.
Or experience, or, you know, whatever.
So not all of us can have these, not all of us can be Oprah Winfrey. Not all of us can be. So the secret, the idea of the secret, everybody can have everything they want, doesn't work. It breaks down very quickly. Some people have to be the fish. Have to be. There have to be people willing to.
But I want to clarify that point, because I know you're saying have to be, but the thing that was so extraordinary in my experience is that they all agreed to be.
Yeah, and they didn't mind. They were fulfilling their purpose.
Exactly. There was no.
Oh, this is awesome.
Conflict. There was no conflict. Everybody was in complete unison in their purpose, regardless of. And it happened that there that in that moment, it comes to that particular piece of magic. But it was this incredible awareness in the moment of like, wow. These fish are doing what they do. They're not victims. They're volunteers. They're there because they do. They don't do it once and done. It didn't happen one time in millennia. It happens every single year. It happens. Every cycle that they do that, it happens. The fish show up. The birds show up. Everybody shows up. They have a party. It's over. You know, whatever the case may be. But you know, that I think probably we're about ready to bring this home for the day, I think. But what I love about seeing that and feeling that was this idea that we're all this cooperative components. If we can find a place anywhere in our consciousness that can adopt or understand or even remotely grasp the concept that you are already purpose, you are embodied purpose. It came with you. You're born. You have it. You're significant. You show up differently in the world when you feel that way. It's not an ego thing. It's a presence. It's a clarity of presence. I am bringing focus to this energy field, and I want to bring this energy field into as many co-creative places as possible. And the cool thing is that I'm not a victim of any of it. In some cases, like you said, some cases I'm the dolphin that gets to swim around and drive things to the surface. And other times I get to be the fish that's swimming in these brilliant patterns and so deeply connected to every fish that's next to me and creating this unbelievable, almost surreal kind of almost being that exists when all of those fish are doing that together, you know, and then being these birds that dive 20 feet underwater to go eat fish, you know, so that, but that's that whole idea that here we are, this wonderfully wonderful array and complexion of these beings, these sparks of God coming to fulfill purpose, evolve, grow, to show up. Here I am. I'm at purpose. Let's find the way to, how do we continue to, in that adventure, recognize that we contribute 100% because we chose to. That's why. Yeah. So I don't know what you would like to say in closing today, or if you have more to add, we can carry on further if you'd like.
Well, I think that as we were challenging ourselves to ask questions to further explore the adventures of truth, purpose, if you asked a million people what the most important questions are on the planet, this would probably be in the top five, certainly the top 10.
Yeah.
So I don't know that really we should try to just say we've done this in one podcast. I'd like to challenge ourselves, perhaps dive a little further into purpose yet again the next time. That would be my, I guess, overview. Is this is a big one. And maybe if it's not next time, we'd revisit it again in a while as it's sat and we've done some more integration work. But yeah. I really don't think we could put our arms all the way around purpose in just one podcast.
No. And I agree with you. I think that you know, the big steps are one, let's have the conversation. Let's get it stimulated. And then, you know, I can tell you just in my own energy, in my own field throughout this process has been, it's stimulated and pinged a whole lot of things that haven't been talked about or that we only tangentially touched because there's way more to it than can be fleshed out in this moment. And so I like to think of these podcasts and particularly, you know, I love that we called this Adventures in Truth and that, you know, we're diving into these things because similar to the concepts we've talked about before, a large part of becoming conscious is identifying what we are unconscious of. And so to become more conscious means to peel back the layers, means to let's look at the assumptions, let's look at what we know, let's define the words, let's do that little bit of minutia to kind of flesh this out. And then as we flesh it out, we've now created a new baseline of conversation. It may not be a new baseline of understanding just yet. It may be partly a baseline of new understanding, but we've created a space between where we started and where we are now. And all of that has to be processed because all of that is the difference in the vibrations and the difference in the field. So it takes a little time to let life experience and purpose fill that moment so that you can let it evolve and let it unfold. So we can see it happening in the world. We can see it happening amongst ourselves and then begin to have an even deeper conversation.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
In this moment of trying to wrap up our podcast for today, the idea of my car came to mind in comparing it to previous cars that I have had. To me, the purpose of a car is to move people from point A to point B. And then, of course, you can do that in a luxurious state of comfort and quiet and power and agility. But that's been long lived already, the difference between an economy car and a luxury car. They still do the same thing. Your experience along the journey might be a bit different, but the end result is I got from here to there. What's really fascinating to me about cars right now is the number of sensors that are being put on them or that are on them. And we're at the point now where cars no longer need to be driven. Mm. They have evolved. Cars have evolved to the point where there are enough sensors and enough ability for them to communicate with their God. Think about that for a minute.
Jeffrey, you're going to hell. That's
The God that controls the cars in the future don't need human beings to operate them. Then specifically them. I mean, there's still a human being ultimately that is overseeing the satellites and overseeing the programming that went into creating all of that. So there's still a human in the loop there. But that's just fascinating to me. So I guess where I was going with that is that some people on the planet have evolved to where they are so sensing, they are sensitive, their ability to sense is much greater. They're the newer cars that have all the sensors compared to some of the older cars that will not make the transition to being able to be operated remotely or pilotlessly or operatorlessly. And so we're living in a world where there's a bunch of new cars on the road and a bunch of old cars on the road. And if we get to a point in society where everything is being done without a driver, those old cars aren't going to be allowed to be in the mix. And we're kind of seeing that right now in human history, where the old way of thinking of competition and the old purposes of manifest destiny, take it at all cost, I've got mine, screw you, that's going away.
Yeah.
And we are in an evolving world where now we're thinking of maybe a smaller footprint, less impact on the globe, less, you know, more kind to Mother Nature, more aware, more wanting to help our neighbor, that sort of thing. That's really encouraging to me to get to see that in my lifetime. And that's, again, it's the same purpose. The car still has the same purpose. The human being still has the same purpose. But there are some of us that have more sensors on us now.
Yeah.
And we're more able to connect and communicate with our God to give all this information that we're talking about and sharing. So that wasn't necessarily a summary, but that's kind of how it came out.
Actually, I was good with that. I was actually, that was what was it? Peter out? Was it? But in a really good way. I have nothing to say. I think that was a brilliant analogy. I think it brought it all full circle in a very powerful way, and just in recognizing, yes.
Right on, Jim. It's always a pleasure, my friend.
Always. Have a amazing rest of your afternoon, and looking forward to our next adventure. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And check us out at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We're on all kinds of different platforms, from Deezer to Spotify to iTunes to, I know there's others and I'm not remembering, Podcast Addict. We'd love to hear from you, love to engage with you. Lots of cool things coming down the pike, and we're super excited to be able to not only take this podcast further, but to be able to break them down a little more, because I know sometimes these longer ones may be tougher to deal with. So we're looking at other options and ways to bring them into some digestible parts and taking them to a different level, so a whole different audience can also enjoy them. So thanks for being here. Have an amazing day, y'all.
So long, everyone. Till next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Podcast. If you would like to listen to more or to explore all our offerings, visit us on the web at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We also offer video versions of our podcast. Visit our page on YouTube at Adventures in Truth Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Like, connect, and follow with us on Facebook. Want to book us for your next podcast or to speak at your event? Head over to our webpage at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com at the bottom of the page and send us a note. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you again at Adventures in Truth Podcast.